Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show July 22nd, 2010. And what a night I have in store for you tonight. This is, for me, this is absolutely amazing. I have a new product announcement, and there's a couple other quick announcements here, but they all somewhat go together. The storm, there's a tropical depression number 3 running through just southeast of Florida right now, and that could run across Florida and then all the way up through the Gulf of Mexico. This is the planned track, or the expected track, as they say, and this could run right over the British Petroleum spill site in the Gulf of Mexico and then go west, bringing the toxic air and water that drags up out of the Gulf there. As the storm moves over the water, it will drag up water. And also, the untold story is that a tremendous amount of gas, poisonous gas, and very dangerous chemicals come out of this oil spill, and those are coming to the surface. The story came out that British Petroleum has a hose that goes down into this pipe where the oil is coming out, and they're spraying this chemical into that hole, and it is Corexit 9500. It's a chemical which causes oil to sink. It becomes heavier than water and it sinks, but the chemical itself is far more polluting than the oil, and poisonous chemicals are going into the water, and then eventually this leaches into the water and into the atmosphere, and then in the form of rain as it takes it up over the country. But the thing about Tropical Depression 3, as it appears it will move westerly, it will go into Mexico and Texas, and then this moisture typically goes up north, could go any place in through the Midwestern states, bringing this toxic rain. And there are now growing number of stories coming out of the southeastern United States of plants, entire areas with plants becoming spotted, where they have like holes being burned through them. It's an acid rain looking type of effect. But this is very serious, and it's just incredible that this cannot be stopped. As I said, the only way they've tried to put another cap on this, as I said long ago when this first started, I said the only way to deal with this, you cannot oppose the pressure that's coming out of that tube. You can't stop it. The only thing you can do is put a big funnel over it, an upside down funnel, and then that would follow a tube out of the top of the funnel all the way to the surface, where you would then start filling this into boats, and which is also typical of an oil derrick or an oil rig, is that you would burn off at that point the excess gases that are coming out, the very highly toxic gases that come out with oil, and those would be burned off. So this would be a minimal pollution event, and that oil would at least be able to be placed in ships and taken off to where it could be refined. But of course, none of that is being done. But the point is that this is becoming a vast pollution event, not only for the Gulf of Mexico, but in the air and in the water supplies around the country, especially the eastern, southeastern United States. But also this will start to get to all of the other states, because all of the other states eventually get water in the atmosphere, atmospheric water, rain, if you want to call it that, from the Gulf of Mexico. Except for maybe the southwestern states would not get any, but the point is that this is a tremendous, almost an apocalyptic pollution event that is occurring to the entire United States, and there are some dire predictions coming from other countries, of course not coming from this country or the Western press, but basically stating that this could kill the United States. I mean, this is, we've already seen where, if you're in the Gulf area, you're going to be hard pressed to live there, let alone sell your property or have any type of economic life. You certainly wouldn't want to eat anything coming out of the Gulf of Mexico if it's still alive. This is an absolutely incredible mess, and it should have been taken care of right away. There were companies from Europe that could have handled this disaster. And, of course, the only reason to let it go is because it's intentional to destroy the United States and everybody in it. But at any rate, the main topic of tonight's show, I'm releasing a new product. And this is something that came out of necessity. This was not something that we dreamed up, just something nice to have. This is becoming a necessity. Now, many people, in fact, I would say probably a high percentage of my audience, my regular audience, has the Dalton water filter and uses the cleanable white ceramic filters. But what we're seeing now is that with the sludge and the runoff, and I'm going to give a number of examples, not only from the Gulf of Mexico, but there's an example just a couple weeks ago that came out of Minot, North Dakota, where there was a flooding rain. Nothing unusual, just a heavy rain. It washed across a field where land oil rigs are running, and also across some farmers' field, and the sludge that washed down into some of the water reserves for these small towns near Minot, North Dakota, killed all the plants, killed all the fish in the lake, and just destroyed the water quality, and nobody can use this water. So what we're finding out the hard way is that the water today, the water pollution today, is of a whole different nature. Now, as I said, the white ceramic Dalton water filters are cleanable. I've talked about that many times. You can take a plastic Scotch-Brite pad with no soap in it, of course, and just lightly brush the ceramic water filter elements and clean them up and go on as usual. But what we're seeing now, the sludge and the chemical waste and the severe pollution that is coming off of even agricultural lands would very quickly clog and make a very big mess out of your water filter. And so what I've done is through some work with another small company, come up with a water pre-filter. Now this sets on top, and it, by the way, this fits any water filter on the market today, any of the major brands. Not only the Dalton, but any of the major brands, because they all basically have exactly the same canister dimensions. So this is designed to fit any stainless steel water filter canister. It sits on top where you would normally have your cover on the top canister of your water filter. You just take that cover off and you replace it with this large, it's a large black three-layer plastic, basically a container that's very big in diameter. It's almost 18 inches in diameter. And this now contains various powders that you would put in depending on the chemical or pollution situation with your water. This could take out just average dirt or debris as a pre-filter. It could take out oil or chemical sludge, benzene, and it's not 100%, but it's going to take out the big stuff, the stuff that's really going to clog up your water filter and make a big mess out of it. You don't want these chemicals going down into your water filter. You want nice, clean water, or relatively clean water. You don't want sludge going in there. So the pre-filter is designed to take the mess out. And then that water drops down into your regular water filter and then goes to a regular filtering process with the ceramic filters. But with the type of pollution we're seeing today, this pre-filter is really something that's necessary. And so anyway, I'm going to give a number of examples coming from all parts of the globe, actually. By the way, I'm not sure if everybody knows this out there, but China has a BP oil spill type oil leak. The same thing, it's a deep sea drilling oil that is leaking, and some people are saying it is worse than the British petroleum oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. And the China one apparently is out in the open ocean. This is just incredible that these companies are drilling to these deep reservoirs, and here's what happens. These reservoirs of oil are contained deep in the earth. And the earth is pliable. It's like almost like a liquid down there under severe pressure. And so if you drill a hole down into that reservoir of oil, it's going to want to get out of there, and all of the oil in that reservoir is going to come out under extreme high pressure, 70,000 pounds per square inch, possibly higher. And there's no way you're going to stop this. There's no way you're going to contain this or bring a little bit out at a time, and that's what the oil companies want to do. They want to pretend like oil is in a shortage, and it's not. There is an abundance of oil on this planet. In fact, I've made the calculation, and I've showed on previous shows, that if we burned only the known oil reserves right now, not the secret ones that the oil companies are sitting on and we don't even know about, but just the ones in the Mideast, in the Gulf of Mexico, the Canadian tar fields, the tar fields in the Orinoco flow of Venezuela, some of these major deposits that we know exist around the world, and the amount of oil. If you burned that oil, if you only burned that oil, and we could also include the coal fields that are known, the coal deposits that are known in the earth, if you burned those, you would literally burn up all the oxygen in the atmosphere. And so clearly we can't do that. There's no amount of rainforests or trees that would replenish that oxygen in the atmosphere. So we've got a very dire situation here, but the point is that the deep wells, they are not able to contain those. They keep drilling them, and these things are going off. So the only way you're going to resolve it is to put an upside-down funnel on top of that leak coming out of that reservoir, and then continue to harvest that oil, bringing it up to the surface and putting on ships. But as I said before, I pointed out that the volume of oil coming out of that one BP oil spill, that one oil tube coming up from 18,000 feet underground, if you started filling ships with that, it would ruin the oil economy. In other words, it would become obvious that there is so much oil that it would literally break the supply and demand cycle, because the supply would far very quickly outstrip the demand. And so that would drive oil prices down, which would be counterproductive to oil company profits. So now you understand why they're not plugging this. They can't plug it. They keep pretending like they're going to, but they clearly cannot. But the new and the really brash and just devastating effect that is not being talked about are the gases that are coming out of these deep wells. These are volcanic-type gases, extremely poisonous, that were brought in when during the comet stage, when these oil deposits were put down there. And so at any rate, the point is, extremely toxic gases and chemicals are coming up to the surface, going into the air, being drawn off by storm systems, and being drawn over and then raining on the land. Just a typical example of early in the days of industrialization, for example, Germany's Black Forest was an immense, immense natural resource, and today there's very little left, and it's simply dying because of the acidity of the rain. Now we have not only acid in the rain, but other severe, extremely poisonous chemicals. And so right now I'm looking at an article that actually was shown on Ron Paul's webpage. It was a link, and this went to another website, News 3 Channel Memphis. It's out of Memphis, but basically in that area of Tennessee, it says mystery crop damage threatens hundreds of acres, and they show the pictures of corn leaves with little white spots all over them. And they say all of the plants have these, and they said no matter whether you're an organic farmer or a traditional organic farmer, or whether you're a modern farmer, supposedly modern, with chemicals and all the right things so that the plants should be healthy, all of the plants, and this is not just crop plants, this is all the plants, trees, weeds, everything, are developing these white spots. And basically it looks like it's a chemical burn where drops of water sat there with these chemicals in it. And it looks like kind of a water drop pattern, you know, after it rains and you see a corn leaf and there's little drops of water that remain on the corn plant or any kind of plant. It looks like that, and it looks like where the water drops sat, and of course they would contain the chemicals, and it just burned a hole right through the plants. This is what's happening, and my projection, everybody I'm sure that reads this is thinking the same thing. This is a result of the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico with the toxic gases coming off, and of course they're burning these, but any fire is a very incomplete burning. So all that does is it brings most of the unburnt, very harsh chemicals up into the atmosphere where eventually it comes back down in the form of polluted rainwater. Okay, so anyway, back to the concept of a pre-filter. These are just examples with the amount of chemicals that are being used, whether it's in farming, whether they are oil fields outside of town. Most people, like say you live in a little town or even a big city, most people don't realize the amount of chemicals that are sitting nearby that if there were a flood, those chemicals would very quickly, very rapidly pollute the water supply, whether it was a deep well, whether it was a shallow well. And let me point something out in terms of a lot of people out there have say a water filter on their kitchen sink. I do. I use it every day. And it's also there for emergency. If you have an emergency, it's that same water filter that you would use. But if you're all of a sudden dealing with a flooding situation and you're going out to get your supply of water, your emergency water, maybe it's a pond in the backyard, a lake or river, a stream, mostly 99.999% of all people out there in an emergency situation, if you have a water filter, you're going to be dealing with surface water. The water on the surface of the ground sitting on top, and if it's polluted, then, and especially if it continues to rain, like the Iowa flooding a couple years ago, we had some experience with that, a tremendous amount of chemical runoff, just all kinds of things going on at that time with pollution. And so the situation, however, is that you don't want to be pouring this sludgy water into your water filter. And let's take another scenario, nuclear fallout. How about a place called Love Canal, New York? I forget the year, but I remember it well. A nuclear event caused a nuclear pollution. And those people in that time had to move because of the pollution. But what if, for example, you were in a scenario where there were disasters going on and then at the same time release of nuclear radiation? What would you do to get rid of that out of your water, at least on a temporary basis, so you could drink some water and survive? Well, back in the 50s, they had already determined that nuclear fallout, as it is called, the radiation that comes down in the rain after a nuclear event of some kind, whether it's man-made, whether it's a leak out of a facility, or whether it was a nuclear bomb, all came down in the rain. And it's called nuclear fallout. But anyway, that gets into the water. It gets in basically on the surface water. And so how do you get rid of that? What they determined in the 1950s is that you would basically use black dirt. So the situation is then that would be one of the types of filtering material that would be used in a pre-filter to then clean that water out, so then you could put it into another filtration process or boil it, whatever technique you're using. Of course, back in the 50s, they didn't have the Dalton water filters as popular and available as they are today. But the point is that they determine a type of simple filtering material that could be used. So back to the water filter. Let me just quick explain the pre-water filter concept. You can put up to three layers or three different types of powdered material in the pre-water filter. And they're separated by basically separator components. They're throwaway, all basically paper and made out of paper. And these would separate the various types of material. So say you only had oil pollution or benzene pollution or some type of chemical like that, you might only use one of the powders in your water filter canister, the pre-filter that sits up on top of your regular standard stainless steel water filter. You would only use one of them, but say you had nuclear fallout pollution and oil at the same time, then you would use a two-layer filtering process. And you could go up to three layers in this pre-filter to get your water cleaned up, the sludge, the big stuff, the gunk out, to get that out before it goes into your regular water filter. And so that's the concept, very simple. And also the parts on this, the hardware parts, are extremely high quality. That's the best thing I can say, that the parts are, it's actually I was going to try and get this mass produced in stainless steel, but the cost and everything were just prohibitive. But what turned out to be the best solution is some very commercial grade, food grade quality plastics, which are on the market today. And they're, for example, I already have the Dalton, the sold with the Dalton filter elements, the plastic, high density food grade plastic canisters that can be used for water filtering. So this is just another item that is made out of plastic. And it's done because, number one, plastics are extremely high quality. They are made food grade, so they don't leach anything into the water or into the liquids or whatever. And then there's another aspect of this. Because the top of this container is so large, there has to be a method to spread the water evenly over the surface of the powder that's in the filter. So that had to be, there's a design for that, so that when you pour the water in the top, it spreads out evenly over the entire top of this very large, like I say, about 18-inch diameter canister that then sits down and it funnels down into the size that fits right on top of your Dalton water filter, the stainless steel water filter, and the plastic one. So, or any standard major brand of water filter out there on the market, this will fit any of them because they're all basically exactly the same size. So very, very simply, that's the situation. So without further ado, I'm going to go into some of the pollution events here that have happened. I've already talked about the Gulf of Mexico. We have Tropical Depression 3 coming in from the Gulf over Florida, expected to pass over right over the British Petroleum spill site and then move westerly. We always think of the Gulf storms as moving easterly and going up through the southeastern states of the United States, but this will be moving westerly, so then the residue from that rain and water will track all the way north into the central United States. So this is an absolute horrendous problem in affecting the water the water in this entire areas, the plants we have. That's our central crop area for this country. It's just an absolute incredible mess. Toxic liquids coming out of the air. Okay, here's one that occurred in the year 2000 in Ontario, a place called Walkerton. Maybe some of you have heard of this. It's actually got a name. They call it the Walkerton tragedy. And this was the result of a water rain pollution event that, there was, a heavy rain, and it came across the farmers' fields up there where there was a certain variety of E. coli bacteria. And this is common in farmers' fields. That's the problem, is that, you know, the fields today not only have chemicals in them, but they have a lot of bacteria because of the very concentrated animal life that the cows and the pigs, etc., that these bacteria are very much in abundance in the field. So if you have flooding that comes off of the farmer's fields and then enters the water supply, which is the case in Walkerton back in the year 2000, there were about, they say, about 5,000 residents in this town who became sick with, they say, bloody diarrhea, gastrointestinal infections, and these were all symptoms of E. coli infection. A particular brand called O157H7 was the particular E. coli bacteria that they found. But about a dozen people died eventually from the water, and the whole town basically got sick. I heard from a person that was actually there that they had, outside of the hospital, they had the people laying on the lawn because they literally had no place to put the people. The whole town was sick, and there was no way to deal with this, and there was no clean water. And so the solution, of course, would have been to have a water filter. But in this situation also, you would have been pouring sludge into your water filter. So basically, there again, the need for a pre-filter to filter the water before it gets into your water filter, just to take the big stuff out, the sludge, the contaminants, the bacteria that is hooked onto dirt particles or remains of animals or whatever. But at any rate, that's Walkerton, Ontario, Canada, the year 2000. Now, here is one that just happened about 2 weeks ago. Excuse me, 2 weeks ago. This was from a place near Minot, North Dakota. Minot, North Dakota, a little sleepy town just in the middle of what one would think is a very unpolluted area. But what happened is they had, once again, a heavy rain. And they had fields where there were oil derricks, and they also had farmer fields. The water came into the reservoirs that were in this area, killed all the fish. Basically, they said by the time the plants died, the fermentation of the plants took all of the oxygen out of the water and basically left a dead lake where nothing could live. Nobody can go there, nobody can swim in it, and they said there was a film of oil floating on the water, so that they were pretty sure that this was oil pollution from the local oil little derricks that were out there filling the fields. But this is the kind of thing that is just, we live in a polluted world today. It's just incredible, and there seems to be nothing we can do about it, because big business has the reins. Everybody is locked into this concept of driving their SUV up and down the road 80 times a day and going to work every day. We live in a society that's on a crash course for disaster. And so the situation is that there's apparently no way to stop, because big business requires, everybody thinks, well, I need my job, I need my make my house payment. And I always find it interesting that people work to April 15th, they say, to pay their taxes, all of that time spent to just pay your taxes, and then the rest of the year is spent working so you can pay interest on your house and car. So what does that leave? And of course, the cost of housing and cars is very high because of the interest, and because all of the parts, all of the business that has to go on has to be done in an economic environment where everything is paying interest. So that interest is reflected not only in the final product, but in all of the parts. So it's compounded, accumulated interest with no end in sight. But the point is that all of this takes energy. And I call it many times useless work, because all we're doing is running around and everybody needs a job. That's the belief. But what is this society coming to? We're poisoning ourselves. We're poisoning the land that feeds us. We're poisoning the water that we drink and the air that we breathe. And it's just, it can't go on. This absolutely cannot go on. But you have presidents who are completely bought and paid for by big business. I didn't understand this, but apparently British Petroleum, the foreign company, oil company, was the biggest contributor to the Obama campaign. And now, I don't follow politics, and I'm not either Republican or Democrat, but if you could, I'm sure, look on the Republican side and see the same thing. Big business in the back pocket of politicians that owns them. And so if this is an economic situation for a big company, then the your rights as a citizen to breathe air, to have clean water, go by the wayside. This is absolutely absurd. And it has to come to the point soon that the population wakes up and realizes this, or basically we're doomed. There's no way we can continue on this path. And so the politicians simply have to be ripped out of the office, thrown off on the sidelines, and in many cases taken to a place where they won't ever get back in these kind of positions again. So at any rate, little towns up near Minot, North Dakota, polluted, and drinking water, groundwater, destroyed. A couple years ago in the spring, I did some research on the Iowa flooding. Remember that? The tremendous flooding that occurred through the Midwest, and then that extended all the way down the Mississippi River Valley, all the way down south, all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, and a tremendous amount of chemical pollution. But at that time, it was very clear that that water was mainly runoff from farmlands, but there were like animals floating in it. It was the most horrendous mess. And I just recount a little story that happened at the time. I, of course, was in the, you know, water, had the water filters available, had them available in quantities, and I called up the head lady in Iowa of disaster relief. And this would be the lady who was in charge of making decisions so something could happen if something needed to happen. This is emergency, remember. This isn't the Saturday afternoon, just like, well, nothing's going on, we can wait till Monday. No, this is severe flooding. People are without homes. People are trying to get to high ground. All of their possessions, everything they have is being lost. So I call this lady, who's the head of Iowa Disaster Relief, and I said, what are you doing about clean water for all these people in there? She said, oh, we're shipping in bottled water. And I was aghast. I said, well, don't you think it would be more effective to send in water filters? Then all these people would have continual fresh water for maybe a small group of people that would share a water filter. And she said, well, I can't do that because we'd have to take it to the legislature and we'd have to do this. And it's just like the red tape that she came up with in the first 10 seconds was more than it would have taken an act of God and beyond to get these water filters into Iowa, where they were desperately needed by these people. And this is in a state of emergency. But they could send in water bottles. And then, of course, the question, what do you do with the water bottle, plastic water bottle, when you're done drinking it? Well, that's another pollution event right there. And so it didn't solve the problem. And it was very expensive. It was good for Coca-Cola Company. I bet you Pepsi and Coca-Cola did real well during the flooding there by selling this bottled water to government agencies and relief agencies. And that seems to be the standard thing. In Haiti, they were sending in bottled water. Well, how long is that going to last? How many people is that going to help? Water is tremendously heavy. It's bulky. How do you get water to people? Well, the clear solution is to take in a water filter that weighs about 4 pounds, and you can filter the 4 pounds empty. Well, you can filter, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds and hundreds of gallons of water with something that only weighs a few pounds. That's efficient. That makes sense. But don't say anything that makes sense to anybody in the government these days, because they can't do anything. They, first of all, don't know anything. And second of all, if they did, they couldn't do it anyway. Some rule or some, who knows, would prevent them from doing it. So at any rate, just a little bit of a side story, but that was on the Iowa flooding. But there we found out the kind of sludge that you can get into, and it became very apparent the quality of the Dalton ceramic water filters to be re-cleaned, whereas, of course, if you have anything, by the way, anything that is black carbon is not cleanable. These are absorbers, that absorb material, chemicals or waste or whatever, and once they've absorbed, then the only thing you can do is throw them out. They're an absorber. A filter, like the ceramic filter, is a actual filter. It takes particles out of the water at the very surface of the filter element, and then that can be scraped off and you can get back to filtering water because the next layer in is the same composition. So the point is that we learned that in the Iowa flooding, but there, even there, we didn't have the amount of chemical sludge that is being seen today. The type of sludge that'll really clog up, and you just don't want it in your canister. You don't want it in your water filter. But at any rate, so I've talked about Love Canal, New York, the British Petroleum pollution out of the Gulf of Mexico, Walkerton, Ontario. And the point is that these can happen any place. In fact, if there's flooding in any given area, it's more likely than not that you are going to have a mess in your water. That's in small town USA. It's out in the countryside. It's everywhere. And once that happens, you're going to go with what you have as far as water supply. And as I said, in emergency, whether it's a man-made or whether it's a natural disaster, the main source of water for everyone will be surface water. And as I said, the type of pollution we're seeing now is very severe in terms of chemicals, oil, sludge, things that are just not natural in the water supply, in addition to the sludge, the dirt, the residue that's in any type of moving water that's stirred up, and that's why that water is colored. You can't see into it. It's level of particulate matter is very high, and so that's what the pre-filter is for. You put the powders in that would be appropriate for the kind of water conditions you have, pre-filter it, and then it goes into your standard water filter. I'm just going to quickly give you some pricing information on this very quickly, and then I'm going to go to some stories about some space science issues, and also just a little more discussion, of course, next week. This is, time is just flying by. Next week, next Friday, or the show next week, I'll be announcing the announcement show, the release show for the new book that I'm releasing. And this book, I think, is going to be a major contribution to, well, I won't say anymore. It's going to be a book that is going to turn people's heads, and it's a book that's very necessary. But at any rate, that's coming up shortly. Next week, I'll be announcing the release date and show for that. And, of course, then it'll be available on the webpage. So, at any rate, to get this filter, this pre-filter started, once again, it's about 18 inches in diameter at the top, and it tapers in so that it fits in nicely right into the top of the Dalton water stainless steel water filter upper canister. And then it comes with, that's the hardware. Inside of that, there is a setup for up to three layers of powdered material, or you could fill it all up with one, or you could fill it up just a little bit with one, depending on your needs. And so powder A, as it's called, would be for chemicals and, like, you say you had benzene in the water, or oil residues, or you just had some kind of liquid. Say there was liquid running off from a farm field, but you really didn't know what it was. Then powder A would be the one you would use. If you just have murky water, say you have water that's been stirred up, and it's just a little bit murky, it might have some plant residue in it, but you know most of that's organic and it's not really dangerous, there might be some bacteria in there, then you would use the powder number 2. And that would have, and these, by the way, will have lists of basically how you would use these. And then the third one, if you were to have nuclear a problem, then of course black dirt. And now the two, powder A and powder B, these are medical and food grade powders that have been assembled for the purpose of filtering out, you know, such things as you would find in water supplies. The black dirt, however, is something that we have not been able to find what you would call food-grade black dirt, so we can't really include it. So just be warned that you would have to go out and buy chemical-free black dirt. Typically, you can find that at the hardware store or many, many places. But so for that reason, we can't sell black dirt. But if you're in a situation where you have nuclear fallout, believe me, getting that fallout out of the water is more important than the possibly little bit of residue that might come off the dirt going into your water supply, which would typically be taken out by the next successive stages of filtering. You would not put the black dirt in by itself. You would put it on the top layer and then have parts A and B below filtering, pre-filtering any residue that might come out of that. But the black dirt, as it is said, is for the is good at taking out nuclear fallout, nuclear waste that would come via rainwater or fallout of the sky after some kind of a nuclear event, whether there was like a dirty spill at a nuclear plant, whether it was anything up to a man-made dirty bomb, a nuclear bomb, etc. So anyway, that's the situation. So the water filter container comes with two powders, and the price for this is $179.95 plus $20 shipping. And so basically what I'm doing as an initial offer, however, is offering free shipping to the first 100 units that are sold on the webpage. And we weren't able to get all of the webpage sales page information up before the show, so come back an hour or two after the show, it'll all be there. So we're still doing a little bit of organizational work on that. But as I said, for the first 100 units sold, free shipping. So you would get the pre-filter hardware with the cover, with the spacer units, and then the spacer elements that go in the middle. The powders are all disposable, and the spacers are disposable. So when you get done with them, you just throw them out and pour fresh into this. And it basically, it's just a few dollars per serving, so to speak. So you could use these filter materials, powders, for quite a bit of time. And then, of course, when you see it getting really collecting a lot of sludge or whatever, you would just discard it and pour more in. But, of course, this is going to save your expensive water filter elements. You don't want to get the heavy sludge on those or inside your canister. That's what the pre-filter is for. So basically you get the filter canister that goes on top of your current stainless steel water filter. You get 50 of the separator sheets, and then you get 9 pounds of part A and 5 pounds of part B, and that's what you get for $179. Plus you can buy the extra powders, so you have them on hand also, and the extra spacers. All of that is available as accessories. And so once again, I'm looking at my notes here, would be included a free copy of the new book that's coming out. Once the book is out, we would mail that to you at your address. So basically you get the free book. That's the new book that's coming out, being released next week. You would get that sent to you as soon as that would be released. You get the pre-filter package plus free shipping for $179.95. And so for mail order, I'll give you the mail order address: JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota 55392. And once again, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota 55392, or go to the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in it, .com, JMCCSCI.com, and it'll be on the webpage, secure webpage shortly. And by the way, this is an exclusive product. It's something that you will not find anyplace else. This is brand new. And very, very high quality. As I said, medical food grade powders. The hardware is absolutely top notch, the manufacturing. And it's really something that I believe you need. And it's unfortunate that we live in a world where you have to take these kind of preparations, but the reality is that, yeah, the world is a very changing place, and what was not true a few years ago is now true. So it's just incredible change of events, and it's mainly due to the incredible amount of chemical and sludge pollution, whether it's from farm fields, whether it's from oil, for the rain from the British Petroleum is going to cover much of the United States. It's a real mess out there, and so being prepared is basically up to the individual. Nobody from the government is going to drive up in a big semi in front of your house, I'm not expecting it in front of mine, pull up and say, gee, Mr. McCanny, we have all this stuff for you, where do you want us to put it? I don't see that happening. I do not see that happening. So the story is that you have to prepare for yourself, or it's not going to happen. It's as simple as that. Okay, well, I'll mention that address at the end of the show. I'm going to jump off to a couple astrophysics topics here and talk about some recent discoveries. There has been a shrinkage of the Earth's upper atmosphere lately, and this is something that happens on a regular basis where the upper atmosphere expands and then it shrinks, and there are people who are experts in this particular aspect of meteorology, understanding the upper atmosphere. But recently, the upper atmosphere has shrunk far beyond any limits that seem to be normal. And these actually happen occasionally, very rarely, but on a scale of many, many decades, not the scale of a couple of days. So at any rate, scientists are somewhat amiss as to why the Earth's atmosphere right now is compressing a bit, or is shrinking. So it's not like anything is going away. It's just a matter of a compression causing a higher atmospheric pressure on Earth. Okay, now another topic. This one I found very interesting. And this story has actually been around for some time, but basically hitting the news right now. There is a planet around a distant star, and it is has a comet tail. So basically, they found a planet with a comet tail, and it's revolving very close to this star. But the odd thing is, this planet is not an ice ball. It's not cold. It's extremely hot. Now, gee, maybe that's some of that NASA black, very hot ice again. Remember that when NASA went out to search for comets and took close-range data and pictures, what they found, let's take a specific example, Comet Borealis, the nucleus of Comet Borealis. A very very small nucleus, but covered with black tar, and they had the equipment there. It not only looked like tar, it was tar. It was an oil hydrocarbon deposit, a thick, long-chain hydrocarbons, they called them. And, of course, there was no water, there was no ice, there was no water of any kind or vapor coming off the nucleus to form the comet tail, but don't tell that to NASA scientists. That was still a dirty snowball to them. So that's why we kind of joke around that it's that hot black NASA ice, because no matter what they see out there, it's going to fit their standard story, and that's their story, and they're sticking to it. Because their paycheck depends on it. It'd be pretty tough on the old paycheck around NASA if they came out and said, you know, Jim McCanny's been right all these years. These comets are not dirty snowballs. There is no ice. There is no snow. There's no water on these nuclei. But there's water out in that comet tail. We don't know where it comes from. And basically, of course, the water is coming into the comet nucleus because it's an electrically discharging entity discharging the solar capacitor. So at any rate, but that's, as I say, jokingly we make mention of that. It's that new black hot NASA ice. That but this planet, now this is a Jupiter-sized planet, and but with a comet tail. Now, wouldn't that kind of also ring of the Velikovsky story of an extremely hot, large comet that came through the solar system and became a planet. So I always love the way astronomers mix these things, but just always relate it back to Dirty Snowball Comet. So what they're saying is that this planet could go away. It could melt away. But now let's just imagine that concept there. So remember, dirty snowballs are supposed to be little too. Now this is a planet and comet that is so big that we can see it at a great distance through intergalactic space. We can see it from planet Earth. This is not just in our solar system. This is a long ways away, yet you can see this comet and, of course, the very hot planet associated with it, circling the sun. And, of course, what the real story is this is a new planet in formation. That tail is being drawn in, and that planet is being circularized. It will become a planet circling that star someday after the tail drag has pulled it into a circular orbit. So at any rate, it's just interesting to see how scientists can continue to use this tremendous good equipment to make discoveries, visual discoveries out there, and then always revert back to these ridiculous concepts. So once again, this extremely large Jupiter-sized planet that has a comet tail that's orbiting this star far distant in the nearby galaxy. It's not that far away, but still not exactly our next door neighbor. But they can see this and then claim it to be some kind of ice ball that's then going to melt away. Now, how absolutely ridiculous. I can hardly go there because it just is so irritating. Listening to this, these constant contradictions that come in, but see the scientists always making it work, always making their story work just right as far as, melding it in with the traditional theories, dirty snowball comet model. Let's see. The situation with weather, I'll just go through the worldwide weather at this point because I've barely touched on it at the beginning of the show where I normally talk weather. But the worldwide weather scene, there's a somewhat severe small storm moving through the central United States, the upper Midwest at this time. But as usual, the big storms are down in the Malaysian area, north and east of the Vietnam Peninsula, Cambodia, those regions, of course, this time of year. Getting tremendous amount of water, rainwater. But that's it for the situation. Will Tropical Depression 3 turn into a hurricane? There's really no indication that there's enough energy in the solar system at this time, in our nearby solar system, to turn that into a hurricane. So what it may do, and this is, of course, predicting the weather is something that's very difficult, but what it seems like this storm will do is what the previous storms did, where they just developed into mild storms and moved across the Gulf of Mexico and then somewhat dissipated. We've had many, many of those this year already. So mild storms broad over a broad range of the surface water, but not developing into full-blown hurricanes. But you never know. It's hard to predict. We could have solar activity move in. We could have a small flare coming off the sun, which we don't really know is coming right now. There's all kinds of factors that we don't really see, we don't measure, we don't know about that could have an effect, an electrical effect to drive up the power of this Tropical Depression 3. So in that respect, it's hard to predict. Where I predict weather is when there's a very definitive electrical alignment of planets. The new moon might be involved, the new moon passing might be involved, and other factors which would contribute definitively. And I have somewhat tables and charts that I've developed for the prediction of severe weather. And I have factors involved. For example, the new moon passing is a very important factor for triggering the storms. Not providing energy, bulk energy for the storm, but for triggering the storm, giving that impulse that'll kick the storm off and get it going. And of course, here's how that works. This is, of course, in my books, all the way from the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, especially listed in the weather book. But here's how it works. The new moon, of course, is right between Earth and the Sun. And so what happens is the new moon is far out beyond our magnetic sheath. The magnetic sheath of Earth, on average, is about maybe 30,000 miles away from Earth. Earth, of course, has about an 8,000-mile diameter. So this is about, what, four Earth diameters out to the sunward side is where our magnetic protective sheath ends. But the moon is about 250,000 miles away. So that would be another about eight times the distance of our magnetic sheath. So the moon is way out there, way, way beyond the magnetic sheath that protects Earth from the solar wind. So what happens is the moon being right between us and the sun is forming that comet situation where it is discharging the local capacitor. So basically it forms this big plasma shield around Earth, and as it moves away 2 days later, it lets that wind, that solar wind, compounding into Earth and kicks off a storm, a triggering mechanism. And I'm just about out of time here, so I'm going to quickly give you the address again for the mail order, $179.95. That includes free shipping. You'll get a free book when the book release comes out, and that's for the water pre-filter. JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. That's P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. And you can make checks and money orders out to JMCC or JMCCSCI.com, the webpage. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.